It's because we are currently in the midst of a cold stretch across the majority of the country this winter, does not mean that the action on the basketball front has cooled off by any stretch of the imagination. As we are currently almost 2 weeks away from the trade deadline and on the verge of seeing some potential moves that could take teams from being on the precipice of reaching the playoffs to potentially being a step closer toward the Larry O'Brien Trophy this coming June. Rivals Week is officially underway, and welcome everybody to the new 24 podcast, episode 11, for all of the dedicated listeners continuing to keep the score, stay fully up to speed on all the affairs and storylines we've discussed throughout the 2024-25 NBA season, wherever you're listening from, as we cannot thank you enough for rocking with us and listening in each and every week. I'm your host, Gabriel Wilkins, and as always, I'm joined by my running mate on the floor and co-host, Torrance Stagger. What's happening, man?
What's cooler than being cool?
I feel you on that one. In the previous episode of the New 24 podcast, me and Torrance took time to highlight the spectacular play of the Indiana Pacers, who currently sit fifth in the Eastern Conference standings after posting an 8-2 record over their last 10 games, while also discussing the eventual return of the NBA on NBC in the upcoming fall, prior to examining which players we believe have made the most imposing cases to win Clutch Player of the Year and which of the game's premier tacticians should take home Coach of the Year. The season's in part two of our month-long mid-season awards combo. As we look to discuss the current state of a team that made a run all the way to the finals last season in this week's episode, in addition to a major storyline that's recently surfaced pertaining to a potential upstart league that could possibly rival the NBA, prior to getting into part three of the midseason awards talk on two more awards in this week's episode. However, before we get into any of that, let's take a moment to begin the show as we always do by showing some love to the top ballers as of late within the association and our opening tip-off segment. Starting off with the man who stars in the city we're recording from, and the two-time All-Star, and Zach LaVine of the Chicago Bulls, whose 35 points in a recent road win against the LA Clippers on MLK Day made for his 109th 30-point game in the Bulls uniform, as LaVine tied the late great Bob Love in the record books for the second most 30-point games in the history of the iconic franchise, as well as Damian Lillard of the Milwaukee Bucks, the 8-time All-Star NBA Cup champion, became just the 38th player NBA history, an eighth active player to reach 22,000 career points in a double-digit win against the Philadelphia 76ers to help cap off a 4-0 homestand for the Bucks prior to heading out to New Orleans to face the Pelicans this Wednesday night as part one of a back-to-back set, including Dame Dolla's leading running mate out in Milwaukee and a young rising star in H-Town, as Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Bucks and Jalen Green of the Houston Rockets were named Eastern and Western Conference Players of the Week for their stellar play in Week 13 of the season. Green averaged 32.5 points, 3.5 assists per contest, all the while shooting 63.3% from three-point land to guide Clutch City to a 3-1 record on the week, while Antetokounmpo would go on to average 32 points, 12.5 boards, and 6.5 dimes per game en route to shoot nearly 67% from the floor to guide the Bucks to an undefeated week as they currently sit just a game above their Central Division rival in the Indiana Pacers for the fourth seed out in the Eastern Conference. Torrance, this last week has been filled with many majestic outings and performances, as we also had James Harden of the LA Clippers surpass Hall of Famers Dominique Wilkins and Oscar Robertson to vault himself two spots up on the NBA's all-time scoring list, as the former MVP winner now sits in sole possession of 14th place, while Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets recently recorded his 18th triple-double of the season, which leads the league by a wide margin in a road victory against Orlando to close out last weekend. Who are some of the top teams or performers over the last week since our previous recording that you believe deserve a little bit of recognition?
Well, I'm going to switch it up this week. I'm going to take it off the players. I'm going to take it off the teams. And I'm going to put a spotlight on two GMs in the league, Mike Dunleavy Jr. of the Golden State Warriors and Rob Pelinka of the Los Angeles Lakers. Both in similar situations. You have aging superstars making a lot of money, guys who have won multiple championships over the years. And as GMs, they both have won one championship each. But they are at a crossroads. The Warriors just had a 40-point loss against the Celtics, and the Lakers have had a pretty up-and-down week. I mean, it came down to the wire against the Brooklyn Nets, a loss against the Clippers this week. You got LeBron, every interview, growing more and more agitated, mentioning how the team has been constructed. Steph Curry's been having to change his answers game to game, trying to keep a united front, but at the same time voices frustration. I mean, you got a few weeks left. It's time to call these guys to the carpet. You're going to have to make some tough decisions. Are you willing to burn the house down to the point that you make a significant move, like moving a Draymond Green? Do you consider asking LeBron, is there somewhere else he would like to go? Or do you just stand pat and try to develop the young guys? Steve Kerr looks pretty frustrated over in Golden State. He's trying a different lineup game to game, trying to find a spark somewhere. Jonathan Kuminga, he wants a deal. Is Austin Reeves and Max Christie in the backcourt enough to propel the Lakers back to at least the conference finals? These things need, like, answering, and we'll get some answers hopefully over the coming weeks.
You make some great points in regards to both franchises who definitely have a lot of questions that will linger over the course of the next several days and the next couple of weeks until that trade deadline officially passes. And you talk about teams that are not only in the same division, but in similar situations from the standpoint of they have aging superstars leading the way. You know, Steph Curry, as we know, as great as he is, you know, he's shown some times this season where, you know, that the age looks like it may be catching up to him, or that father time, as we like to say. And, you know, we've even seen it with LeBron James. And while we know that these guys are athletes and they're going to try to fight it, you know, to the end of time if they can help it, we are all told, you know, like they say in Moneyball, as Brad Pitt said, rather than the film. So, you know, they got some choices and decisions to make, both Mike Dunleavy and Rob Pelinka, that could dictate either what's to come in these next few months with both franchises or what's to come in the future. Because they definitely got to pick a lane. And you bring up Jonathan Kuminga, you know, who's injured right now, has been out for Golden State. Their lineup is really taking a hit with his absence. You know, he was really starting to find his groove, playing some good basketball before he got hurt. And now he's looking like a component or a link that was vital to their success, especially the success that they had early on in the season. But for me, I'm going to keep it player-oriented and talk about two players that have stood out to me with their performances over the last week, starting with a guy that I kind of gave a little bit of kudos to towards the end of last week's show, and that's Mark Williams of the Charlotte Hornets. You know, I talked about how he had a double-double outing against the Suns, where he had 20 and 10 at the half, posted a 24.16 rebound night to go alongside a 4 assists with a block in that game that they really were in control of, but they managed to falter towards the end at the hands of Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal. However, Mark Williams has managed to follow up that double-double outing with three more. He counted. Is the former Duke product, has constructed one in his last four outings, one in which he racked up a career-high 31 points and shot 12 for 14 from the floor on the way to hauling down 14 rebounds besides two assists, two steals, and a block, and a road win against the Utah Jazz. And the Hornets have been playing some impressive ball since. They won three games in a row. And it's been real cool to see Mark Williams playing a vital part in their success. This is a guy that's battled through several various injuries and setbacks over the course of the last year. Had a back injury a year ago that kept him out, in addition to a foot injury that he suffered prior to the start of this season that caused him to miss the first couple of months of the year. However, he's managing to make the most of his time on the floor, taking the time to remind a lot of fans and players around the league that just how good and effective he can truly be when healthy. the 23-year-old. He's shooting 58% from the floor, averaging almost 18 points and 13 rebounds per game in under 30 minutes per outing for Charlotte in the month of January. This is a team that, like I said, is currently on a three-game winning streak as of this recording, in spite of being without the services of Brandon Miller, who's out indefinitely with a wrist injury. And while we know and we talk about what LaMelo Ball has provided Charlotte with, Mark Williams has played just as much of a critical factor in the Hornets' success as of late, using his frame and size in the interior to make a Clint Capella-like impact for them. And if they can ever find a way to get their core four healthy out there in the Queen City and all together with Ball, Williams, Miller, alongside of Miles Bridges, we could potentially see this team turn the corner for better sooner rather than later under head coach Charles Lee, who we know has been a longtime assistant in the league, dating back to his days with Milwaukee, as well as Boston, where he won NBA championships. Although Mark Williams is certainly helping to make them a fun team to watch as of late, besides LaMelo. It's definitely a team that you need to watch if you don't have them on your radar right now. Even though they're under, well under 500 in the standings, they're playing some great basketball. And how about Trey Murphy III of the New Orleans Pelicans? You know, a team that hasn't provided their fans with too much to get excited about for most of the first half of the year. However, with the return of Zion Williamson, beside Murphy as of late, has led to some success. They're currently on a four-game winning streak. And while Zion has provided some highlights of his own in the games he's played in, albeit on the minutes restriction, it's been Murphy who's really emerged as the brightest and has cemented himself as a key piece to their future out in the Big Easy, man. The four-year wing out of Virginia posted at least 24 points or more in four out of his last five outings. Recently had back-to-back 30-point outings on the road in a win against the Bulls, as well as the Celtics, in which they nearly almost pulled out, despite being without Zion at the TD Garden, in large part due to his contributions. And we've always known that Trey Murphy III could impact games defensively alongside the likes of Herb Jones. Always has shown an ability to knock down the three ball and catch and shoot situations as well. But now I believe we're starting to see him evolve into a complete offensive player. He's averaging nearly 22 points per game, five rebounds, and nearly three assists per game through 28 contests this season in New Orleans after missing some time early due to injury and really looking the part of a foundational piece over there. Something that you really like to see with homegrown talents such as him, whose role will likely expand once we find out what all will unfold regarding Brandon Ingram at the trade deadline, as we talked on a few episodes ago here at the New 24. Pelicans just recently got a big overtime win in front of their home fans on MLK Day, coming back from down 25 points against the Utah Jazz. And players such as Murphy are playing a role as to why you're seeing the outcomes that you're seeing right now if you're a New Orleans fan. Let's move on from the opening items to talk about a squad that we will see featured twice on NBA Rivals Week that managed to knock off the top-seeded Thunder in the Western Conference semifinals last season en route to earning a trip to the NBA Finals for the first time in 13 years, and that's the Dallas Mavericks, a franchise that was once sitting among the top four of the Western Conference standings a month ago in the days prior to Christmas, but has now fallen in the wake of recent injuries to several players, including their most notable star guard, Luka Doncic, who suffered a left calf strain in the days prior to the new year and has been out of action for over the past month, as the Mavs currently sit a half a game, above the Sacramento Kings for the seventh seed and find themselves in the play-in range out west after going 3-7 over the course of their last 10 games. Torrance, although the Mavs are sitting just over the 500 mark, with a 23-20 record, Dallas is 10-11 thus far in games without Doncic this season, who has been out of the lineup their last 13 contests. However, this may not be the most concerning thing as of late, as the Mavs have gone from boasting the fifth best offensive rating in the NBA to 26th in the absence of their five-time All-Star. Their depth in the front court has been slightly decimated, with Derek Lively II dealing with a right ankle sprain, Dwight Powell recently suffering a hip injury in their most recent win against the Oklahoma City Thunder this past weekend. Jaden Hardy also went down in that contest as well with an ankle injury that's kept him out of action, and most notably in their recent matchup against Charlotte. Quentin Grimes was also a late scratch as well in that one due to back spasms. This is a team that has proven to be one of the best in the league when fully healthy. But when you look at their current roster, and consider all of the recent injuries this team has had. Do you expect Nico Harrison and the Mavs front office to be aggressive at the upcoming trade deadline in the quest to turn things around quickly?
I feel like the Mavericks should just stand pat and just worry about getting healthy. But if you look at some of the injuries that some of the guys have, like Kyrie Irving is dealing with a bulging disc, maybe you might want to go get an additional guard you can bring off the bench. The guy, somebody that can come in, get some, score some points, try to like relieve Luka in a Kyrie-esque way in case of injury, similar to like how teams bring in Spencer Dinwiddie every year.
All right.
You know, but other than that, I really like this Mavericks team. I like the way that the roster's constructed with Gafford and Lively up front. We haven't had Luka, like you just mentioned, for 21 games this season. They are seventh seed, I believe, as of today.
Yes, they are.
So, and Luka might be back in a couple of weeks, and just him alone will definitely hold this team afloat. I think more than anything, it's just a matter of getting healthy because we still haven't seen him at full strength. You know, once Luka's back, everything can fall back in the system. Now Kyrie's more dangerous because he's not the main focus of the defense. Now the role man, they're back effective because Luka's back. Now Klay's getting easier shots. Now you can have guys like Jaden Hardy and Quentin Grimes like fulfill more of that bench role and not have to play so many minutes. So they have pretty much everything you need to win a championship. So only for like safety reasons should they make a move, but they don't need anything roster and productivity wise.
It's interesting you say stand pat because that's really been a big argument and debate when it pertains to the Dallas Mavericks these days. Should they stand pat? Should they seek to go all in and make a move? I agree with you. I think that this is one of the strongest rosters that they've had on paper in the Luka Doncic era. And I do believe when Luka is able to return, it's been speculated that he'll be ready and available to return following the All-Star break, that they can hit the ground running and get back up into the thick of things in the conference standings out west. However, they're going to have to find a way to win some games without Luka. And even though Kyrie has done an incredible job of trying to keep things solid for the most part, like you said, he's playing with a bulging disc in his back. That's been documented and reported as well. They have a tough schedule coming up, man. Like they have, I believe, Oklahoma City on the road. And they also have Minnesota at home this week alongside of Boston in a finals rematch to cap off the week this coming weekend. So, like, they got to find a way to get some of these games in their favor and in the hopes that they don't fall to either 500 or slightly below 500. Because I don't think, even though I trust them to do well and fare well in a play-in situation and fully healthy, I don't necessarily believe that that's a place they want to be. If I'm a team like Dallas, I'm trying my best to get into the top five as much as possible and get a favorable matchup similar to what they did last year when they got with the Clippers in round one in that 4-5 seed range. But I don't know if I expect them to make a big move. However, I don't expect them to just sit passively either, considering the fact that, like I said, they're in the play-in round of the West standings right now and they're coming off of a tough loss against Charlotte. You know, they got some holes that they're going to have to fill defensively on the wings, in my opinion, just to take the load off of P.J. Washington's shoulders down the stretch. You know, we know that he's played a boatload of minutes for Dallas as of late. I think a player such as a Matisse Thybulle in Portland could be what they need to combat some of the top wings in the West. Doesn't really need to score as much to make his impact felt there right away. And I think with a team that already has their core three intact that they can lean on as the year goes along, and he can fit in rather seamlessly there. You know, people forget that the Mavs, they almost acquired Thybulle in the summer of 2023 when he was a restricted free agent prior to Portland matching their offer. I could see them trying to acquire even a backup center such as Andre Drummond from Philadelphia as well in the event that Lively or Gafford, who's also been on a trading block but is still in-house, was to go down for an extended period of time. And Adem Boner could also be a big from the Sixers that they could find interest in. For those who don't know who he is, he was Philly's second-round draft pick in last year's draft out of UCLA. Very raw, but has a young is a young big, rather, that has a knack for using his size well and length within the interior to swat shots, can set screens, do the dirty work for a team that when presented with the opportunity for, you know, those, like, who never peaked his game when he was in college. Like, he has that skill set. And I think playing in a limited role as he develops on a contender, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for him. I really see them going after insurance pieces more than anything, to be honest with you. And you talk about how they may need a guard, you know, to take a little bit of the pressure off of Kyrie. I think Jaden Hardy was doing an excellent job of that before he went down with the ankle injury. But if they want some insurance on that front, maybe they could go after a guy like Jordan Clarkson, you know, who's on the final year of his deal, who could be a good fit over there as well. So they got some options. I don't think they got to hit a home run and make a move for a guy like Herb Jones, as they've been linked to, and we know it's going to cost them some draft capital if that's the direction they want to go. But I think that they got to make some moves.
I think, well, more than getting healthy, Luka Doncic has been out for, like we said, a pretty long stretch.
Mm-hmm.
When I look back, the two things that he struggles with the most on the basketball court is his commitment to playing defense and arguing with the refs. Until he fixes those two things, the Dallas Mavericks won't win a championship. They have all the components. Like, as you mentioned, those are a lot of solid moves they could make. Few of them, as just hearing them, I'm like, you know what? They should probably explore some of those options. But they have everything. You got the coach. You got the willing organization. They went and got you a superstar in Kyrie Irving. You guys got to the, like, what's your opinion of Luka Doncic?
I think Luka Doncic, when he's on his A game, is a top five player and force in the league to be reckoned with. And I do agree with you. I thought he had a hell of a playoff run last year. I thought we saw him for the first time in the postseason actually buy in to the defensive principles that was being sold to him by Jason Kidd and that coaching staff down in Dallas. However, I think the one thing that can really take Luka Doncic to the next level is getting his conditioning up to par. You know, we've seen this guy come in, you know, in seasons of past where he's not always in the best of shape. And even though he's still putting up monster numbers and near triple-double stat lines left and right, he's costing himself a lot of golden opportunities by not committing himself to getting in that shape, man. And playing defense and playing in the finals year after year is going to require him to be in the best shape of his career. And if that's what he wants to do, then that's what it's going to require him to get in shape.
Now, here's something else that just came across my mind too. It may not definitely be, it won't be this season. But let's say they have another unsuccessful playoff run. Kyrie Irving's getting up there in age, NBA-wise. He's going towards the last year of his deal.
Mm-hmm.
He has a history of knee injuries. Now we're talking about a bulging disc. Ideally, you building a team around Luka. Are you looking to add a superstar wing, or are you trying to go find a big for him to pair up with? Like, what would be your ideal running mate for Luka Doncic?
I think a wing beside Luka Doncic could take the Dallas Mavericks to the next level. I mean, you know, we've had discussions in the past about some all-stars who I won't necessarily name for this episode that could have been perfect fits down in Dallas. It's a wing or a forward right now that is wrecking force and havoc on the league right now, that if probably his team wasn't together, you might have seen some reports with his name being linked to Dallas. You know, after the rough start that they got off to. And for those that don't know who I'm talking about, never gonna talk about Giannis Antetokounmpo. You know, so it's guys that they could go and get. And we know Dallas is a market where stars may not necessarily flock to them because of, you know, past business practices, but they have traded for some. So I would like to see a wing. I wouldn't mind seeing a big man beside Luka, but I think Luka has one with Daniel Gafford that they could build around. Yeah. I don't really understand too much of the rhetoric involved in
Derek Lively.
Derek Lively as well. Can't forget about him. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Oh, so you meant Daniel Gafford.
Those two were integral parts in their run towards the finals a season ago. So like Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively, you know, like they have the bigs. I mean, for years always
in tandem.
Like that was the thing that was missed. Yeah, they got a big man tandem. That's very solid. So if I was them and I wanted to add another piece to help unlock this franchise and really put us in a position to be a power player in the West and all of the NBA, I'm going after Wayne.
Yeah, because I mean, I look at it and I'm like, with this roster as constructed, the Luka Kyrie thing, I'm like, yeah, maybe two more years. But then what's the next move? Because, you know, for the past few years, we've always heard the rumors too about would Luka ever leave Dallas and what would those teams be? So he's kind of got them under the gun as far as having to continuously make changes to this roster. And they have a new ownership group too. Let's not forget that. This is not Mark Cuban's Dallas Mavericks anymore. No, so we don't know how this team may operate in the future. So far, not much has changed. But like time will tell.
Yeah, and the thing I look at is like, to me, the Mavericks are in a situation that's sort of akin to the Rockets during the James Harden era. They just had more success. They have an all-time great offensive player who guarantees you a top five offense when you're healthy, or when he's healthy, as well as a 50-win season. You're more than likely going to be within the top four or five in the Western Conference. However, you question whether or not this is a championship team year after year because of what you see from that star in rounds where the pressure mounts higher and higher. Like I said, I think Luka Doncic is a top five player in the game offensively. But if he wants to take this team back to where they once were 13 years ago under Dirk, and that's hoisting a Larry O'Brien trophy, it's going to require him to buy into at least on some levels defensively and getting into the best shape of his career. He has to do it. He has to do it because over time, his body will continue to break down. And he's had several issues with his calf over the last couple of years. And at some point, man, if you want to reduce these injuries and play 75 to 80 games a year, this is what it takes. And that was always the thing that was funny to me when people would always want to compare Luka to Harden. Because even though Harden had, you know, his questions, one thing you could always count on with James Harden during his prime is that he was going to give you 75 to 80 games.
Yeah, man, after a lot of long nights, too. Yeah. So, that's
right.
I definitely heard he was a legend in two sports. But the same things that you said as far as Dallas ideally would need a wing to pair with Luka, that was the same thing we used to say about James Harden.
We did.
Paul George or Kawhi Leonard. And then, ironically enough, he ends up playing with the both of them in LA on the Clippers. So, yeah. I mean, I got a couple of names I would like to possibly see with Luka, but, you know, we'll talk about that, I guess, whenever that time comes up. But as far as this team this year, I think if they can find a way to get healthy, they have as good a shot as anybody in the West to make it back to the finals.
Yeah, for sure, because it's going to come down to matchups at the end of the day, man. And that's what I really hope that the audience, you know, is peeping, because as we saw last year, Dallas was one of those teams that they kind of snuck up on a lot of guys and shocked everybody. You know, they got hot post All-Star break and they made that run. And it's a lot of teams at the top of the Western Conference that do not have the experience that this Dallas Mavericks bunch has. The most notably is leaders in Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving, who we know are battle-tested in the postseason. But I want to push the show along from the decisions that loom out in Dallas to conversing about a major story that broke in the middle of last week involving the best friend and business manager of one of the game's esteemed greats. According to Bloomberg, LeBron James' right-hand colleague, Mav Carter, has been enlisted as an advisor by a group of investors that are seeking to raise $5 billion to form an international basketball league that will rival the NBA should it come into existence. The group, which is also said to include private equity and sovereign wealth funds, desires to form a league that consists of six men's teams and six women's teams playing games around the globe. According to ESPN, Shams Charania of ESPN recently reported that James is not involved in the efforts with this new league. The NBA has not had a significant rival five-on-five league on its turf since the 1970s with the ABA, which, as we know, they ended up creating a merger with on the way to absorbing four of his teams in the Pacers, Nets, Nuggets, and Spurs. I know you've had plenty of things to say about this report to me after it came to the forefront this past week. What are your thoughts on this recent report? And what do you think it means for the game overall as we know?
Just to start with the latter, there's a lot of basketball talent around the world. We got a lot of guys who you see it every day scrolling on whatever social media platform feel like they should still have a chance in the league. John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, Michael Beasley, so on and so forth. I'm sure guys we don't know internationally. Some of, you know, high school legends from your local city or town that you know. Got a lot of basketball talent in the world. And we also see, if you keep up with it, that the price of entry to get an NBA franchise is higher than it's ever been, which eliminates a lot of people from buying an NBA team. But when you got cities like Las Vegas, Seattle, Kansas City, Louisville, a lot of teams that want expansion NBA teams, who's to say that it couldn't be a group of rich guys to come together and say, we're going to put our money together and we're going to get some of this top talent and we're going to put them in these different cities. Well, that's essentially what Maverick Carter is trying to say and threaten the NBA with this report, because this, in all honesty, is just a play to try to gain leverage for LeBron James and whatever group he has, whether it's Fenway Sports Group or some of the guys that are alleged to be a part of this league with Maverick Carter. It's just a play for him to gain leverage to get that Las Vegas franchise. The franchise is reportedly going to cost upwards at least $5 to $6 billion between Seattle and Las Vegas. We know that there's going to be some type of bidding war for those franchises. There's only two spots. The league just signed a new TV deal that we just spoke about.
Right.
You got to try to gain whatever leverage you can get. LeBron, I mean, come on. He's not Steve Ballmer. He doesn't own Microsoft or anything like that. So he has NBA and endorsement money. And so I'm sure some other investments. But he's not the richest guy that's going to be bidding for this team. Michael Jordan wasn't the richest owner in the NBA, but he ended up with a team through situation. And also because he's Michael Jordan. Throughout the duration of Michael Jordan's career, he was only the highest paid player two times, his last two seasons in Chicago. But we all know the global impact Michael Jordan has had on the game of basketball in the NBA. And he was able to recently cash out by selling the Charlotte Hornets. I think he got them for around $200 to $300 million. And he sold them for, what, $3 billion, I believe? Yeah. I'm sure Gabe will get the official numbers. But LeBron James, we know the global impact he has had on the game of basketball in the NBA since at least 2003. And he's only been the highest paid player one season, and that was immediately after the 3-1 comeback against Golden State. And he became only the third player to cross over $30 million for a season after Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant did it. And that was only for one season. Now, you know, if you try to buy Lakers tickets, those tickets are going to be higher than if the Hornets come to town. Same with 100%. Steph Curry when he comes to town, Kevin Durant. The superstar tickets are higher. LeBron James has been putting money in the pockets of all of these owners for the past 20-plus years. The only way he can cash out potentially in the right way is to own an NBA franchise. But do you have the leverage and relationships for that to happen? They already did Michael that favor. Do they feel like they have to do the same with him? I'm not sure. But it's a good play. I don't take the report serious because six teams, men and women, to threaten the NBA with as many rich people out here that's available. Come on, man. That's not a serious report. If you really wanted to get serious, that report would have included at least 12 to 16 teams each. It would have stated which cities they were going to go to. They would have stated the amount of money they willing to pay players. Yeah, they threw some buzzwords out there like we'll offer players equity. Nah. Tell us that you got some billionaire that's going to own a team in London and he's willing to pay a Steph Curry or a LeBron James $100 to $150 million to play for a season. You see it in Saudi Arabia with Cristiano Ronaldo. You saw it in the MLS with Lionel Messi. If I said Lionel Messi, I don't watch that shit.
Yeah, Lionel Messi, yeah.
But I know, and I understand.
You got Neymar right now being linked to the Chicago Fire.
So this is where basketball is going. So the idea of a league, yeah, like I said, it would have been a lot more teams. They would have talked about a more favorable schedule, maybe 60, 70 games, you know, something that's, we talking legit. Throwing together a 16, like, come on, bro. We got the WNB. We got the women with the 3-on-3 league, which I love. Right.
Yeah,
I love because it's like a lot of players are invested into it. But then at the same time, you see the politics. They were able to keep the big domino off the board, Caitlin Clark.
Right.
Man, come on. We know why that is. But yeah, LeBron, this is just a leverage play. I mean, I hope it works out for him, but the idea of them giving him a team in Las Vegas or Seattle, that's different than Charlotte, bro. That's different than Charlotte.
It's much different. And you talk about Michael Jordan when he purchased the Hornets. He purchased the Hornets in 2010 for $275 million when the team, as we know, was called the Charlotte Bobcats at the time. And then he sold his majority stake in the Hornets to a group led by, I believe, his hedge fund managers, Gabe Plotkin and Rick Snow, for $3 billion in August of 2023. And he still managed to keep a minority stake in the team. But you're right. Charlotte is much different than Las Vegas. And we know that there will be two expansion teams coming to the NBA. This is no secret for those that keep up with the NBA. And the markets have been Seattle and Las Vegas all from the beginning since these expansion talks have surfaced and came to the forefront. Now, my initial thoughts on the report is it's interesting that they would try and create a women's league possibly. But like you said, with six teams, yeah, that's not a lot of teams for a league. And even though it's interesting from the standpoint that it adds more to the culture of basketball, and it would be cool to see another league surface where they're giving guys jobs and an opportunity to still be on a stage, albeit an international stage, which is a big stage, to show that they can steal ball. I'm not saying I can't see it, but I understand your points that you're making when you say that this could be a long-term play or ploy to try and get people backing them for this Las Vegas franchise. I mean, we talked about it with the inaugural NBA Cup privately about how we knew that this was going to be a big event for LeBron James, in which the Lakers ended up winning by defeating the Indiana Pacers, and he won Cup Tournament MVP, I believe, or for the championship game, he's MVP. And we've even said how maybe in the future that award may be known as the LeBron James Trophy, you know, considering that Michael Jordan has the MVP award. Magic and Larry have the Conference Finals MVP awards. You know, Hakeem Olajuwon has Defensive Player of the Year.
Kobe has the All-Star game.
Exactly. Kobe has All-Star game MVP. You know, you consider this, at some point, LeBron's name is going to have to be featured in the forefront of this league in one way or another when his playing career comes to an end. And even though, you know, Maverick Carter and his firm with LR, MR, with LeBron as well, Randy and Rich, they've done some incredible work. Like I said, it caught me by surprise. And I think they could have a good thing going. It's a great idea. But I understand where you're going with it. When you say it's a ploy, it could be used to be trying to get some guys on their side for this Las Vegas expansion team that, like I said, we know is coming.
Yeah, because the number in the report gives it away. Like, you're gonna start a league for $5 billion and it's two teams going for $6 and $6.5 billion. Like, come on, bro. We like, you got to be able to like read between the lines with certain things like that. And they haven't confirmed necessarily that the teams will be Las Vegas and Seattle, because I can see a scenario in which Seattle gets a team and then they try a different market, like a Kansas City, St. Louis, or Louisville, to put another team in instead, because these leagues like to play funny games. You know, like, if we expand in Seattle in another city, now we can always still keep a Las Vegas when it comes to stadium deals for any of the other franchises. Well, hey, we'll move our team to Las Vegas. You know, they always like to try to keep a market like that available. So we're not all the way sure that it'll be Las Vegas, because also you see like the NBA Cup, they try to use that as like a neutral location for the NBA Cup Summer League as well. So I don't know if they'll just want to just completely give that team to an NBA market, but pretty much at this point that's been reported. But if they were,
well, they got the facilities now.
Yeah, they was talking about that. But if they was talking about a real league, just to go back to that point real quick, bro, we talking about like 20, 30 billion. Like, you got to talk real numbers for it to make something shake. For, you know what I'm saying, to really get it going out here. Like, man, they talking about starting another basketball league. Any, like, that low-ass number, man, that's team money now, man.
Especially when you talk about the team numbers, got to keep in mind, there's 30 teams in the NBA. So I don't think a 16 league is really scaring Adam Silver and front office officials in New York, the NBA headquarters.
Because the game, like when we talked about the TV deal last week, it's about, you can put on 800 to 1,000 games and spread it between the different networks and get the money coming in. You got six teams, like, come on, bro. How many times are you going to, like, switch those combinations, have great competitive games to draw interest and make some money? Like, that's just not possible. So in order for it to be taken seriously, you gotta come like how Live Golf came. Like, we got a full tournament. We it's a lot of prize money at stake. Like, they came in with a real plan.
And they also had a TV deal in place too with the CW. And see, that's the thing.
And that's the part I was trying to get to, right? That was the part I was trying to get to, as far as like the amount of games that the league can put on. Like, if you want to come in with a rival league, it's so many networks and streaming apps that would love to take on a sports league right now.
Yes, it is.
So, like, if you really trying to like come with a real plan to like scare Adam Silver, man, you gotta, if you're gonna lie, lie good.
Yeah, it's a lot of networks that would love to take on a league right now. I mean, we're on the verge of seeing the end of the NBA on TNT. And even though TNT will have the NHL and Major League Baseball, outside of those two tenets, all they're going to really have to show you in the fall is Mountain West college football. I'm pretty sure if this league, had about 12 to 18 teams, it could get interesting real quick. And I'm pretty sure TNT will be one of the first networks in line trying to figure out, hey, how can we get you on air in the fall? Because once the fall comes up, in the next several months from now, in the year 2025, there will be no more NBA basketball on TNT. It's going to be NHL, but on the nights where the NHL isn't on, I mean, all you fucking got is really AEW. So it's a lot of scenarios at play. Like we talked about how Netflix at one point in time was looking at trying to take on the NBA, and they're trying to put their hand in live sports. We just saw them have the NFL games on Christmas Day for the first time in the streaming services history. So I look at a lot of factors, man, when it comes to this league. I like, the vision for it, but I can't see it. And like you said, $5 billion, that sounds about right for an expansion franchise. Anytime you're seeing a lot of these franchises getting sold for 2.7 and $3 billion. And I know a little bit about franchise sales because when I covered the Houston Rockets, I remember they got sold at the time to Tillman Fertitta. And I want to say it was for in the ballpark between like 2.2 or $2.4 billion at the time. And that was a record-setting sale back in the summer of 2017.
Yeah, and a lot has changed since then.
Yes, it has. And it was actually $2.2 billion, as I have it pulled up, because he bought it from Leslie Alexander in September of 2017, just shortly after Labor Day. Like, yeah, like these teams now are going for $3 billion and up. And the number continues to go up. And you're seeing a lot of these hedge fund managers that are seeking to get in where they fit in if they can, because it's an exclusive club.
Yep. And they'll spend it.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's what Brian, that's the disadvantage. Like I said, you don't make that kind of money. So you're gonna have to really put a group together and you're gonna have to politic that situation.
Oh, 100%. And I wouldn't be surprised when the day comes for him to pony up and get that group together. I wouldn't be surprised if it's in cahoots with the group that he's always been
Well, Fenway.
and with. Like you said, that's the Fenway Sports Group. They own the Pittsburgh Penguins together. They had that stake in the Boston Red Sox, as we know. So in Liverpool. So,
Yep.
it's there. He has the colleagues to do it, but yeah, he definitely won't be able to do it alone. But moving on from all of the latest discussions surrounding Maverick Carter's quest to construct a new basketball league, to getting back into a special segment that we've been using to highlight the game's top stars and more in the month of January, who we believe have put themselves in a peak position to take home several of the NBA's top individual honors after the regular season here at the New 24. Welcome to part three of the mid-season awards conversation, where last week we shared which players we think have emerged as the lead front runners to take home Clutch Player of the Year, in addition to the game's top coaches that will likely be in the running for Coach of the Year. Let's start things off this week by examining the candidates who have made the best case thus far to garner an award that salutes the NBA's de facto general manager or high-ranking front office executive, known as the Executive of the Year Award. This is an award that is conducted by executives across the league from all 30 teams to vote on. Brad Stevens, former head coach and now president of basketball ops for the Boston Celtics, is the most recent recipient of the Executive of the Year honor, as the Indiana native won it en route to helping put together a foundation that culminated in the franchise's first NBA championship since 2008 last season. Torrence, depending on who you talk to around the league or those that cover it, many believe Trajan Langdon of the Detroit Pistons or Leon Rose of the New York Knicks to be the odds-on favorites to win the award. while others have listed Rafael Stone of the Houston Rockets, as well as Sam Presti of the Oklahoma City Thunder, his name's also worthy of being first-time recipients of the honor, in addition to Kobe Altman of the Cleveland Cavs as well. Although we know things can change in the weeks that lie ahead with the trade deadline coming up soon, which front office exec, as of this recording, do you believe has made the finest case among his peers to win this award?
I mean, if we just judge him, I guess, off of the past year, then, man, this is a tough one. I'm going to have to go with probably Leon Rose. Leon Rose, man, that Carl Anthony Towns chain trade, that was big, man. Cat over there looking like everything you wanted from him as the number one pick coming out of Kentucky. He's found a way to match that game up inside and out. You know, like, he's playing center this year legit. You know, of course, you would love to have a more stronger presence down there at times, but, I mean, bro having 30 and 20 games down there, so he doing the work. And that was a strong move. The Mikal Bridges move, that was a strong move. I'm not too sold on OG and Unobi, but, hey, he made the move. It gives them a strong starting five. Convincing Jalen Brunson to take that deal, he need a new contract just for that. Like, that was crazy. Like, Jalen Brunson taking that deal. Just speaking on it out loud, man, it might have to be Leon Rose, but a lot of guys have done great work. Sam Presti continues to do work, bringing in Caruso and Isaiah Hartenstein, but we haven't seen that team fully healthy, including Chet as well. But just on the surface, that was a great move. And Trajan Langdon in Detroit, I mean, I'm going to keep reiterating this. The Pistons didn't have a coach last year. They have an NBA coach this season, and they've made improvements. But Trajan Langdon, he has done a great job, but he's made some solid moves over there, like bringing in Tobias Harris and Tim Hardaway Jr. But most importantly, they have an NBA coach, and Cade Cunningham is healthy.
And, yeah, 100%.
And, I mean, you just want to give a shout-out to Brad Stevens, man, for just being aggressive in the right ways with what he's done over there in Boston. But as far as an award, I can't really say all the way right now. This award, I know it's always existed. I don't know how they vote on it, because I think team building is not just a one-year thing. It's a process that's done over many a years. All of the moves count when it comes to building a team. This is not – even the Miami Heat Big Three, that wasn't done in 1 year, you know?
That's true.
So the Golden State, getting Kevin Durant, it took move after move to even set up the scenario that even became a possibility. So this is not a – is in reality, this job is not a one-year job. But I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, I agree. It's not a one-year job for damn sure. But like I said, this is an award that is conducted and voted on by the executives across the league from all 30 teams to vote on. And I think based on – if you go back and look at the history of the award winners, I think they base it on what primarily happened during the offseason and whether or not it led to success in that season in which they're voting on. When you talk about Leon Rose, I can understand why someone would view him as the front runner. Because in my opinion, when they traded for Carl Anthony Towns in New York, that was the trade of the summer. That was the blockbuster trade of the summer. It was a move that, I'm not going to lie, as you know, we had conversations privately about, I thought could be on the table. And to see Leon Rose pull the trigger on that, make it happen, and see it paying off exorbitant dividends early on through the first half of the season, it's been a vital part and reason as to why the New York Knicks are a top three team in the Eastern Conference right now. You know, everybody talks about Jalen Brunson, and rightfully so. But like you said, when you're putting up 30 and 20 lines and you're leading the league in rebounding, something that I never, ever expected to see Carl Anthony Towns do, I must say I'm impressed. The Mikal Bridges trade, that was a very bold trade, giving up all that draft capital that they had to Brooklyn. you know, struggled early on, but he's found some successes in recent times. We saw the big game that he had on Christmas Day. Leon Rose has done a hell of a job over the last few years. And I believe if he were to get the award this year, as you said, it would be a culmination of moves that he made in prior years that put him in this position. But nonetheless, he has the Knicks looking very successful under Tom Thibodeau, and they looking like a team that's poised to finally get over that Eastern Conference semifinals hump and possibly get to the Eastern Conference finals if things go well, even though they might seek to make a move or two at the deadline. For me, when I look at things, I think Sam Presti of Oklahoma City is going to get it. And the only reason why I think he is because of the standpoint that he's never gotten it. And now he just so happens to have one of the best teams that he's ever had, if not the best team in his tenure, you know, record-wise at least. We know that he had we record-wise at least. We know he had
look the Hall of Famer. Not even just to cut you off. I got to cut you off. It's not the three future Hall of Famers. It's not the three MVPs. They had Kevin Durant. Like, y'all gonna
understand
stop,
that.
Y'all gotta stop talking about Kevin Durant like he's not one of the all-time greats. Like, most, like, you see the Hornets and the Pelicans still struggling as franchises?
No, I do.
Kevin Durant turned the Oklahoma City Thunder into a legitimate, respected franchise in the league.
I know he did.
He did that.
Yes, he did. I don't take anything away from what Kevin Durant has done. It would actually be kind of unique if a reunion was in the cards at the trade deadline. It would be. You know, it's been speculated. It's been reported that, you know, that could be a possible move. I don't know how true that is. But when you look at what Sam Presti has done, rebuilding a situation that you could say he screwed up, you know, not getting rid of James Harden and whatnot, but they managed to stay afloat, and he's built a college-like atmosphere in Oklahoma City, a team that right now is looking like they are the prohibitive favorites to come out of the West and be in the NBA Finals this coming June, at least right now, based on the way that they play. You know, still a lot of season left and a lot for those guys to prove, but he made a trade and happened to get Shai Gilgeous-Alexander after having to give up Paul George, who wanted out of OKC, you know, and it's paid dividends for them. Lu Dort is evolved from a guy that was on a two-way contract to one of the best defenders in all of basketball on the wing. You know, you got Chet Holmgren, albeit he's injured. He'll be set to return in the next month and a half. They can really take their time with him, with how well they played to start the season. But I think Sam Presti will more than likely get it, just from the simple standpoint of that he's the media darling. That's who they like.
And that's why I don't think he needs to get that award. Like, man, I don't want to use the word, but they be on bro a lot. You know what I'm saying?
They do.
I get it. You know, he got a bunch of draft picks at his disposal. You know what I'm saying? Like, he finessed the Clippers, quote-unquote, out of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But at some point, like I said, we got to give the credit to the players. Shai worked on his game and developed it to this MVP level. No matter how good of a trade a GM can make, it's up to the player to rise to that occasion. You don't think that Kevin Durant set the tone in OKC along with Russell Westbrook and James Harden, where those guys pushed each other to get better? As players, like, great award. These guys do deserve credit for their work. It's a thankless job, I'm sure, a lot of times.
Very much so.
I'm sure it's stressful. But then you also get to have power like Pat Riley sometimes. So I'm sure it's fun, too. But, yeah, man. You know, Sam Presti. But I would love Sam Presti to get a job like the Los Angeles Lakers or the Chicago Bulls. I said the same thing about Usai Ujiri, even though the Raptors do have a lot of money. But I would just love to see some of these guys that can really make those small moves and find guys at the bottom of the draft, these elite GMs, I would love to see them in big markets. Like, could you imagine if Sam Presti was in control of the Lakers as opposed to Rob Pelinka?
Yeah, that would be interesting to see. It would be interesting to see him in the city we record from in Chicago, because when you think about it, Sam Presti has done something that the Bulls organization hasn't really done a great job of doing in the last 13 years. I would say from 2004 to 2011, under the Gar-Pax regime, they did a great job of drafting very well. But since that time span, they haven't really done an exceptional job, and as a result, their product has suffered on the court. With Sam Presti, even in spite of some things that you could question him on and decisions that he made, he found a way to keep a competitive brand of basketball going in Oklahoma City. We know that Kevin Durant and James Harden and Russell Westbrook helped to establish an identity and a culture with that Oklahoma City Thunder franchise that has managed to stand the test of time. And I do believe that those three guys deserve their credit. I don't think they get enough credit for that. Alongside of Jeff Green and Serge Ibaka, who was also there, we see how Jeff Green has played an integral part on several different teams following his career at Oklahoma City. Look at what he did in Denver, winning a championship there. You heard how Nikola Jokic spoke highly of him. And in Houston, you know, you hear how Jabari Smith Jr. and the young guys speak very highly of him there. So he still has a career that's going strong in year 17. So they've done an exceptional job from bringing in talent that works well beside one another, and as they say, iron sharpening iron, while also continuing to ensure that that culture remains strong even when those players depart.
Yeah, they definitely have.
But let's get into the award that we know plays a vital part in teams not only being successful, but having a chance to win a championship, and guys who are known for dominating this side of the basketball, striving to win, and that is the Defensive Player of the Year, an award where the winner is selected by a panel of 124 sports writers and broadcasters around the league who cast a vote for first, second, and third place selection. Rudy Gobert of the Minnesota Timberwolves took home Defensive Player of the Year a season ago, becoming the third player in league history to ever win the award four times, joining the late great Hall of Fame center Dikembe Mutombo, as well as Ben Wallace in that exclusive club. For all of those future bettors who may be listening to this episode, San Antonio Spurs center Victor Wembanyama is regarded as the odds-on favorite to win this award, according to what you will find across the majority of popular sports books out there. However, other players such as Evan Mobley of the Cleveland Cavaliers and Lou Dort of the Oklahoma City Thunder are also likely to gain strong consideration for the honor, including Jaren Jackson Jr. of the Memphis Grizzlies, excuse me, who captured Defensive Player of the Year honors in 2023. In a manner akin to Coach of the Year, like we talked about last week, Torrance, the Defensive Player of the Year award is one that, depending on who you ask, is guaranteed to elicit different responses. We know that this is an award that big men typically win and have won, as power forwards and centers have accounted for the majority of recipients over the last decade. Do you believe this trend will change in 2025? And who do you have winning it?
The trend won't change. It won't change in 2025, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. Hey, as long as Vic wants to play basketball in the NBA, he probably going to have this award sold up. And I think that's why you get in the big conversation of, well, do we need an award for the perimeter players? Because he getting this award, man, like his presence alone would put him in the top three for this award. I mean, you see guys turn away from the basket when they just see him there. And he's still putting up, what, close to four blocks a game?
Yeah.
Only, what, Mutombo and Akeem pretty much do stuff like that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, bro, unless it's a guy that comes along that's locking up Shea, Luka, Anthony Edwards, any Ja, anybody on the perimeter, and then taking on threes and fours, unless that guy comes along and he can, we really see it with the eye test, he locking guys up. Yeah, man, I don't see like Wemby not getting his award for at least the next five seasons. Because what is the most, what, four? Four is the tie.
Yeah, it's a three-way tie between Rudy Gobert, Ben Wallace, and the late, great Dikembe Mutombo.
Yeah, man, Wemby cracking that record for sure.
I believe you.
Because he got, then you consider he got guys like Stephon Castle up front, who I can see being a solid defender going forward. We know what the, like, that award is over with, man. I don't think Rudy should have got all those awards anyway.
So we all know that's been debatable. A lot of people feel a little way about that.
But I ain't think Marcus Smart deserved the award either. So Defensive Player of the Year, honestly, if you want me to be real, bro, I think this is actually an award that should be strictly voted by the players and coaches.
I believe at one point in time,
all of these awards were. MVP used to be a players voted award too.
Well, I didn't know that, but I do believe that Defensive Player of the Year in the NBA was voted on amongst the players. I'm about to pull it up now. I'm about to pull it up now because I'm trying to see. And I believe it happened that way because of, like, the current CBA or whatever. I do agree, though, Defensive Player of the Year is an award that should be voted on by the players, because the players tend to know best, because they in the heat of battle each and every single night. And a lot of times I think, and I'm not trying to shit on fans or media members, but it's a lot of times media members, and I've been in media rooms in the NBA before to see, they not always watching these games the way you would think a beat writer or columnist should. Most of them is mostly fraternizing, doing other shit. Now, I understand, you know, it's politics and business involved in your job, but, like, when you see greatness and you getting paid to watch greatness, I feel like you should take it as a sense of pride and duty to make sure that you keep your eyes focused and attuned to the game as much as you can. And I had the pleasure of watching Victor Wembanyama live up close in person earlier this month. And it's amazing how he pretty much has the paint shored up. Like, just watching him against the Bulls in the first half of that game, even though the Bulls came back from down 19 to win, like, no one wanted to drive. Nobody was seeking to drive in the lane against him. You talk about Stephon Castle, they got a little code name, Area 51 in San Antonio for him, you know, that they're trying to market and whatnot, and I think that's pretty cool. But, yeah, Wembanyama, man, he's in a league of his own. And, like, I was watching Walker Kessler last night against the Pelicans, and he's second in the league with blocks. And I believe it's, like, 2.2 a game. And Wembanyama has four. Like, if it was any other year, he, you know, would be the block champ in the league. But it's not even close. I think Wembanyama definitely has the catbird advantage, you see, brother, in regards to winning Defensive Player of the Year, man, because, like, last year, he made first-team all-defense as a rookie. He's the first rookie in the history of the league to do that. He took a team that was one of the worst teams defensively, and just off his presence alone, they became a middle-of-the-pack group. And now they're among one of the top groups in the NBA, and it's in large part due to him. He just alters a lot, man. He covers so much ground, and it's a lot of times, man, if you ever get a chance to watch him play, or if you have any, you know, money that's disposable that you would like to spend and you're an NBA fan, please take the time to watch him defensively, because he does shit that you can't teach. You just can't teach it.
No, and, like, that's the important thing. Like, I like Rudy, when he gets switched off on the perimeter, it's not a problem because he covers up that much space.
Yeah.
You know, like, I would love to see the Spurs. I said before, I would love to see the Spurs put another big next to him so we can just kind of see him play free safety and just really see how, like, good a team could be defensively. Because I just think at one point they're going to put together, like, a historic season on the defensive end of the floor with him holding down the fort in the middle.
They have the ability to do it. I mean, you remember me and you were talking prior to the draft last year about Donovan Klingon out of UConn, who's a defensive stalwart in his own right inside the lane. Yeah. I'm like, could you imagine if they paired them together and, like, you know, would play them in spurts where 1 minute you play Klingon and then the next minute you play Wimby and then, like, late in the game you close out with the two of them together? Like, it would be imposing and suffocating. I really thought that they could have had something there. And they still could, you know, pair him with another big in the future. But, man, like, Wembanyama, yeah, he definitely holds his own and on the perimeter as well, as much as he does in the paint. But just the shit that he does, man, it's absurd. And, yeah, I definitely see him being a guy that's going to get to at least 3 Defensive Player of the Year awards real quick. And he's going to threaten to get that record and be in an elite company. I definitely see him with a bunch of Defensive Player of the Year awards on his mantle.
Yeah, man. Ja the only one that tried him at the rim, and that shit didn't even count.
Kobe White got him.
Kobe White did get him. Shout out to Kobe White.
He got him. I mean, and it was kind of it was shocking that he actually went up there and caught him real quick, but he caught him when he wasn't looking. And even Kobe knows because he said if I'd have got him just a split second later, he said, yeah, he'd have got him. So, like, that just goes to show you the presence that he commands in the lane. Even guys in the league know, like, you go up against him, 9 times out of 10, you're going to get your shit handed right back to you.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't know if you all know, but Rivals Week is currently taking shape across the NBA this week, people. As the majority of the primetime matchups that you see across ABC, ESPN, and TNT will consist of a mix of old and new school rivalries that you likely won't want to miss, such as the first game of the NBA on ESPN doubleheader this coming Wednesday night, where Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves look to bounce back after a tough road loss against the Grizzlies on MLK Day by pulling up into Dallas and facing off against Kyrie Irving and the Mavs, seeking to take care of home after their recent showdown during Christmas Day. As the Western Conference Finals rematch from a year ago goes down at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Central Time, followed by the Battle of Northern California between the Warriors and Kings going down in Sacramento at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central Time, with a vintage rivalry being renewed in the nightcap game following Heat Bucks on TNT this upcoming Thursday night in downtown Los Angeles. Is Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown guide the defending champion Celtics in the third game of their 4-game West Coast road trip to take on LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central Time. We also got a triple header affair on ABC this Saturday as well, with the reigning MVP, Nikola Jokic, and the Nuggets facing off against the Wolves out in downtown Minneapolis at 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central Time in a Western Conference semifinal rematch, followed by an NBA Finals rematch as the Celtics will conclude their road swing against the Mavs down in Dallas at 5:30 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Central Time, with the nightcap affair involving 2 all-time greats, as you can catch LeBron James and the Lakers square off against Stephen Curry and the Golden State Warriors in downtown San Francisco at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central Time. The stars, as we know, will be out in full effect. What games are you looking forward to seeing on the Rivals Week schedule?
Oh, man, sorry for that chuckling idea, but hey, the NBA with this Lakers Warriors stuff, LeBron shit. Like, I get it. I get it, bro. But damn. Like, God damn, boy, y'all gonna get every ounce of blood, sweat, and tears out of them brothers for real. Man, honestly, I mean, we got Cleveland and Houston Wednesday night. That should be good. But I'm gonna be a Chicago Bulls fan this week, honestly, bro. Like, I'm looking forward to see if we can take care of business against Golden State Thursday night in San Francisco. We play Philly Saturday night. Because I'm, like I said, Lakers, Warriors. I'm going to watch it because, like, we never know when the last game them old guys going to play. But neither one talking about retiring anytime soon, even though their teams are average. But I'm going to give Philly and the Bulls, I'm going to give it a little run for a while. Kings, Knicks, that should be interesting. Houston and Cleveland once again that same Saturday night. Like it's just better games than that Lakers Warriors game. Milwaukee Clippers the same night as well. Yeah, and the rivalry week thing is funny, man. I think we got to let some of these – look, we either need to let some of these rivalries come together organically or just play WWE and just, like, just force it. You know, just force it. Give me Jai and you know, give me Dallas against Zion. Just mix it up. We're like, Knicks and Nets, are we serious? Are we serious with the Knicks and Nets thing? Like, honestly. The Knicks take over every – like, they take the arena over.
I saw that one on the schedule. I was like, oh, my God.
Like, Lakers-Celtics, I understand it. I look forward to it. But, like, come on, man. Like, sometimes we got to just let it happen organically or, like I said, WWE it, but not the same matchups all the time.
One game on Rivals Week that I will have my eye on is a game that will tip off at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Central Time. You got the Pelicans going up against the Memphis Grizzlies. Zion Williamson, I know he's been on a minute restriction. Will he play? I don't know. You know. However, if he does, and Ja Morant does, I think we'll be in for a treat. We're talking about the top two picks from the 2019 NBA draft. As we know, Zion went number one overall to New Orleans. Ja went number two to Memphis. These are two guys that played on the same AAU team as kids, grew up together in South Carolina. I want to see those guys compete against one another. We haven't been privileged to see this rivalry year after year due to both of these guys being in and out the lineup, especially Zion. So if we could get that matchup, I think that would be a treat between those two stars in the league, man, because Zion Williamson, I don't give a damn what nobody says about whether or not, you know, he loves the game or not. When he's out there playing, it don't matter if it's 28 minutes or 32 minutes. He's putting up numbers, and he looks like the most efficient force I've ever seen on a basketball court. I don't know how long his days will remain in New Orleans, as we've heard his name reported in many trade rumors over the last month to month and a half, but New Orleans been playing some good basketball as a reason. Like I said at the beginning of the recording, they're currently on a four-game winning streak going into the top in the top of this week, week 14. Memphis is one of the top three teams in the West. I think it'll be an interesting matchup. If you got NBA TV, check that out. Another matchup that I like will be going down this Thursday. You got the Raptors and you got the Hawks. I know the Toronto Raptors aren't a team that's on your radar. But Scottie Barnes been playing some incredible basketball lately, ladies and gentlemen. You got an Atlanta Hawks team that, you know, when it's Cleveland and it's Boston, they look like the best team in the East. They kick their ass. But it's a team that's under 500. These are the teams that Atlanta typically tends to struggle with. Can they find a way to put Scottie Barnes and R.J. Barrett in check? Let's find out. You know, it's a game that's going on down in the 8th. That's a game that'll be tipping off on League Pass at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 6:30 p.m. Central Time on Thursday, January 23rd. If you're not trying to check out that Heat versus Bucks game, that might be a game you want to watch.
Hey, look, for y'all gamblers out there, he just pointed out a great possibility. The Raptors and the Wizards have by far the worst road records in the league this year. Both teams have only won one road game apiece. I'm just saying, do with that information however you please. I'm not going to say which side of the coin you should bet on because no gambling app is paying us yet to do that. But the Raptors and the Wizards have not had any success on the road this year. Maybe they have some success this week. Maybe they don't. You play the odds.
Yeah, that's well said because it's a game that the Hawks should really take care of business in. But like I said, this is a team that unless they playing the top two or three teams in the league, they don't always come to play some nights. That's just me, you know, keeping it real and stating the facts. But that's all we got for you on this week's edition of the New 24 podcast. Thanks to everybody who took out the time to listen in to this week's conversation centered around the top storylines over the last several days around the NBA. As we truly appreciate you taking your precious time to do so. There is no us without you all, in addition to your support. If you enjoyed what you heard thus far over the course of this episode, in addition to the previous 10 episodes prior to this, for all of the devoted listeners of the show, please feel free to make your voice heard and let us know what you think by leaving us a 5-star rating across the podcast platforms you use to listen to us every week, on top of also subscribing to our RSS feed to make sure that you're not missing a single future episode once it drops every Wednesday morning over the course of the regular season. You can do so at rss.com/podcast/TNTF. And if you want to chop it up with us across the Twitterverse known as X, feel free to do so and follow us at What Gave Said, GAVE, as well as Torrance at TStacks_STACKS. If you like to interact and engage with us away from the podcast to talk about some hoops and more as it pertains to the culture of the game, for myself, Gabriel Wilkins, and my co-host, Torrance Stagger, have a fantastic week and peace.